where do I go? Follow the ghost. Where is the something? Where is the someone that tells me why I live and die? Where do I go? Follow the children. Where do I go? Follow their smiles. Is there an answer in their sweet faces that tells me why I live and die? Follow the wind song, follow the thunder, follow the neon in young lovers' eyes. Down to the gutter, up to the glitter, into the city where the truth lies. Follow my heartbeat. Where do I go? Follow my hand. Where will they lead me? And will I ever discover why I live and die? I live and die.
That's a good way to start a show. That's from the album Hair, title cut, or not the title cut, but the cut is titled Where Do I Go? Stephen Bailey is with me today. It's the second Friday, and he's prepared a special show, which is even a surprise to me. So we're starting with a piece of music that Stephen brought. We'll be going to some more music, and then Stephen's going to talk for a while about a really interesting topic, which is a surprise to me as well as to you. So we're all going to be enjoying a whole new kind of moment this morning. I am Marlena Smith. It's 4 minutes after the hour of nine. You're tuned to your community station, the one you make possible. And we want to remind you that we are going into Pledge Drive in March. And so you need to start thinking about your contribution to this radio station. How much of your discretionary or educational funds or community funds do you want to allocate? Because we will be coming to you, the listeners, for our annual spring Pledge Drive. A couple of points of information. I have cited Daphne and actually have some in my house right now, but I got a note here from Kathy. Daphne sighting on 18th and Morrison. She said she has had Daphne that opened as early as January 25th, which is the earliest ever, and she started Daphne from a mother plant and now has them in bloom, and she had some blooming in December. We've definitely had an unusual spring, but the Daphne are out, and I'm sure that means Payphone Patrick is out there hunting down Bodentensia as well, and I'm pretty thrilled about it. I love this wind. It's very Aquarian, the wind sign, the air sign, and I know a lot of people in the gorge don't like all this wind, but I'm one of those people who does because it's easier to get in my front door now. My car doors aren't stuck, and I just love the blue sky and the movement of the air, so I'm digging the wind. And we're under a heavy wind watch until 1 o'clock, so watch your trees and send them good energy. Couple of other announcements. Eugene Johnson, KBOO volunteer, is going to be reading poetry tonight at Grendel's, which is on East Burnside and 8th, right near KBOO. And I think that if you get over there around 7, you'll be there in a real good amount of time to be able to get settled in. Also, I just got a notice in my mailbox about something that's very exciting. On March 4th, for a one night only, and I sure wish it was more than one, at Kell's Irish Restaurant on Southwest 2nd Avenue, downtown Portland, A Most Notorious Woman is going to be presented. It's an exciting new play based on the real life of the last Irish queen, Sea Captain Grace O'Malley. And this is about a pirate, a woman who is a pirate, an amazing woman. I've played her music in the past. It's a one-woman show, a bold and intimate look at the real life of a totally remarkable woman who used her ship to benefit her pirate agenda. And she was out there when men were mostly pirates, so she's a pretty amazing woman. So if you're free on March the 4th, you might want to get tickets and get over to Kell's. Also want to let you know that Paul Chasman, author of the Book of Bob, we interviewed him back in the fall, a wonderful book that was sort of an inspired piece in the Kurt Vonnegut style about a guy who gets a divine vision. And it's very socio-political, very satirical. He's going to be reading next Thursday, February 16th, at the St. John's Booksellers Bookstore, which is just to the left of Dad's, if you know St. John's. It's or you can take the number 1740 or 75 bus. So if you cross the St. John's Bridge, it's just to the left in the little business district there on North Lombard, 8622. Just wanted to give you a heads up on that. Excuse me, I'm getting over probably one of the worst upper respiratory whatevers that I've had in my adult life. There's a bad bug out there, and I got a theory about it. Part of my theory is that coffee shops that make, espressos, bless their hearts, those rags that they use to clean off the nozzles that go into the coffee, I got a feeling that because they're wet and they sit around, that they're probably pretty contaminated. And I'm not trying to put any coffee shops down. I just think that it's a real problem, and we may need to come up with a different way to do it. But I got a feeling that that's how a lot of virus gets transmitted around the community. So that's my thought. And please don't call or yell at me. I got a feeling that that might be it. So we might need to just drink drip coffee for a while. Okay. Excuse me. If I can get through this, I wanted to let you know there's a full moon coming up on Saturday. I'm sorry. Actually, it's really Sunday in the afternoon, and it's Leo and Aquarius. It's a big one, so they always are. So let's read what we've got coming up for the full moon. The chart for this lunation is based on the zero of Aries rising, and this is from the Mountain Astrologer. Leo and Aquarius are fire and air, heart and mind, the individual and humanity. This full moon asks us to remember our mission, the reason we chose to incarnate at this time, and the part we elected to play at this evolutionary juncture on Earth. The archetype of Leo represents the quest for one's unique expression of the divine, the embodiment of one's dharma, or true nature, or work. In the book An Astrology Triptych, Dane Rudger wrote that the fifth sign, which is Leo, the greatest gift and challenge for that sign is simplicity, to transcend duality and drama and be simply who one is. Leo is associated with the image of the king and the lion, symbolizing not rulership over others, but the attainment of sovereignty over oneself. Where the moon at 24 degrees of Leo falls in your chart is where you are being called to take the next step in expressing your unique spark of creation. For Aquarius, Dane Rudger identified service as the greatest gift, to be the servant of humanity, acting for the good of the whole. The water bearer pours out his wisdom for the welfare of all. The 11th sign, Aquarius, is the stage of development where we are no longer enslaved by convention or dogma and live in authenticity, equality, and diversity. Kin, race, and religion, and nationality are subsumed into the family of humankind. Where the sun at 24 degrees Aquarius falls in your natal chart shows where you are making a break from the past and have the power to operate as an agent of change. Full moons eliminate the shadow, bringing light to whatever has been dark. The shadow side of Leo is self-absorption and a sense of entitlement. The dark side of Aquarius is hypocrisy and heartlessness. This full moon also shows us where more light and love are needed for ourselves and for the world. Uranus, ruler of Aquarius, is in the third year of an 8-year run through Pisces, breaking down the psychological and social programming that keeps us from seeing that we are all made of the same clay. Think about, in a parenthetical note, think about the national level right now and the geopolitical scene as you're listening to this. We are all made of the same quarks and the same luminosity. Uranus conjoins Mercury during this full moon, encouraging us not only to think differently, but also to stop thinking and become receptive into our more intuitive wisdom. Jupiter and Mars oppose each other and square the sun and moon, forming a wide, grand cross, a fixed cross, an energy configuration that pushes for the breakup of fixed or long-standing patterns. So you can imagine there's going to be a lot of activity, parenthetically speaking, as people are forced to come to grips with old behaviors that don't work anymore. And if we don't tune into them, then the universe will create circumstances to force us to pay attention. And we certainly hope that the folks in the White House and that whole Washington crowd get whatever they need now to balance their karma. Continuing, Jupiter in Scorpio squares the sun and moon, helping us to see our fears in a new light, especially the trepidation of being different or of dissenting. And parenthetically, we're now knowing that people are starting to talk about dissent as a patriotic response, which is an important change in the popular culture. Back to the text, Jupiter also squares Neptune in Aquarius, making it easier to find common ground and shared goals. Mars will square the sun and moon, urging us to act on what we really want and what we really need, not just what we think. While the red planet, which is Mars, waning opposition to Jupiter, prods us to let go of what is unnecessary or unfounded. So it's a kind of a thinning out, clearing out energy. Chiron, the wounded healer, is close to its opposition to Saturn in Leo, suggesting that we share our truth, and that that can be healing for everybody concerned, and that the most important thing we can do for the world is to become the person we were born to be. This full moon turns the light on where we are still trying to fit in and where we are still in the closet, and where our honesty and authenticity can make a difference in the world. The Sabian symbol for the sun at 25 Aquarius implies that we need to act on our highest principles. A butterfly with the right wing more perfectly formed, the capacity to develop the rational and fully conscious aspect of the mind ahead of normal evolution. The image for the moon at 25 degrees Leo advises us to keep going, even if surroundings are not supportive. And parenthetically, we're certainly seeing that. A large camel is seen crossing a vast and forbidding desert. Self-sufficiency in the face of a long and exhausting adventure. And parenthetically, we are definitely there. This full moon pushes us to trust and to live our truth, and to be mistaken, is the final quote, is a misfortune to be pitied. But to know the truth and not conform one's actions to it is a crime which heaven and earth condemn. And that from Giuseppe Mazzini. That for the full moon coming up this weekend, big old full moon. Get out there and look at it. We'll probably be able to see it because the weather is good. And I think I just want to let you know one other thing, which is that after Stephen Bailey in our first hour, who is a naturopathic physician, and we do remind you that you should seek your own primary care provider. Stephen is just here on an informational basis, not to be treating anyone, and you should not consider this to be treatment. It's just a conversation to give you some ideas about what you might discuss with your own private provider for health care. Then at 10 o'clock, we're going to go to Michael Mead. We're going to continue his series on myth. Which is a symbolic language that helps us understand ourselves and this mythic time in which we're living. The CD we're starting today is titled Fate and Destiny, and we're going to look at the two agreements that Michael has come up with, which are fate and destiny. And then at 10:30, I'm going to bring back some Dave Emery. Don't groan. For a lot of you, Dave realizes that the anti-fascist literature that he brings to the airwaves, which is as much as 30, 50, 70 years old, is older than many of you are interested in hearing. So what he and a number of listeners have done is they have compiled something like 50 old anti-fascist texts. Dave has written introductions, and he's going to put them up on Spitfire for free. They'll be a condensed form, so you can download them for free and put them in a little binder, and then you will have a really good working library in your own little house to understand the critical history of anti-fascism in the West, particularly. Okay, now, let's see. I'm going to give you a little music, and then we'll be right back with Stephen Bailey.
Take a look at yourself and you can look at
Okay, that from the CD Ocean. Let's go to Stephen. Stephen, you want to introduce your topic?
Yeah, I would. My topic today seems to be both what your astrological and your next show is talking about, although myths are sometimes founded in science. I'm going to be talking about transitions. I'm going to be talking about where we go when we leave this plane. 4 weeks ago on a Friday night, I got a call at home from a frantic woman, and I could hear the chaos in the background of her house, and she'd been given my name, it turns out, from a person in Arizona, and told me that her husband had been sent home with a few days to a few weeks to live, that he'd had an untreatable cancer, and she wanted to know whether I would be willing to see him, and I told her I would. I was in on the next Saturday, the next day, and told her I'd call her to confirm that they'd have 12 o'clock as a time. And I did, and at 12 o'clock she came in, and shortly thereafter her husband was brought in by ambulance folks. He was on oxygen. He was in a gurney. And I talked to them. I talked with him a little. He was highly sedated, but he came through a few times, and we told some stories about his work, and I made certain that he was comfortable working with me, and I talked about how weak his system was and how most solid foods weren't going to serve him, and I tried to comfort them and give them a few suggestions of foods that they might help have, and they went off with some smoothie recipes and a desire to start getting some juices for this man, fresh vegetable juices, and the next morning I got a call at home again, and the woman had lost the smoothie recipe, and so I told her how to do it, and I decided I would go out and visit them in Corbett, because I certainly didn't want people coming to see me in an ambulance. And it was a beautiful day, and after I'd done my morning activity, I took the long road in the sun and listened to our own Ed Goldberg on the classical station talking about Mount Martin Luther King Day. And it was a beautiful time, and I got there and went in and spent time with the family. I made them a smoothie and saw that they tasted it well, and the husband, the man with cancer, drank it and said he liked it. And he was basically asleep the entire time we were there, and I talked with the family, did some music with grandson, talked about what goes on in life and where we go and what they can do to support him in this process. And the mother told me that every day in his life, this man who was a mason, not a Freemason, a man who made bricks, who was a hard worker, they lived in the woods, every day in his life he made someone laugh. And that was his gift that he had to share with people. I got a call the next day at home, and from what they told me, I knew that this man was very likely to die very soon. And I didn't hear any more phone calls from him. And on Tuesday, I sort of felt that this man had left. And I called on Thursday and said, you know, I left a message. I just want you to know that my thoughts and prayers are with you. And if there's anything I can help you with, please feel free to call me. And I didn't hear from them. And on Saturday, I left a similar message and said I'd really appreciate a call at the end. And on Tuesday, the wife called me and she said, well, you know, Dr. Bailey, I just really want to thank you for being there. It was so special and we all really appreciate what you've had to say. And my husband died at 8:21 on Tuesday last week. And I said, well, you know, you will find that as we leave these bodies, we are able to effortlessly, without pain, soar in what in mythology and the science of the spirit is called the astral plane, and that your husband will be able to look after you. He'll be able to maybe come into your dreams and perhaps you'll get a sign or two from him to let you know that he's okay. And she said, well, doctor, he's already given me the first sign. And I said, oh? And she said, yeah, we were going down to our daughter's house in Coos Bay for a memorial service. And as we got to Albany, there were floods, and we had to stop. And as we pulled into the parking lot of the motel, On the radio came our favorite song, Put Your Hand in the Hand of the Man. And I looked down and it was 8:21 exactly, 2 days after he'd passed. And this sort of gave me goosebumps. And she said, and then when we got to Coos Bay, we were in a motel and I was channel surfing and along came Flip Wilson show, which was one of our favorite shows. And Flip brought on a man who started singing, Put Your Hand in the Hand of the Man Who Stills the Water. And I called out to my daughter and I said, honey, what time is it? And she said, Mom, it's 8:21. And so at exactly 48 and 96 hours after this man left his body, somehow in his wife's reality, their favorite song appeared into her consciousness. And it gives me goosebumps to think about this, but it does not surprise me. I have been around so much death and passing that I know 100% that there is a spirit, that there is an essence within our bodies. The Greeks, according to Pythagoras and Plato, said that there was substance, which was the earth, air, water, and fire. There was form, which is the body that we or our animal friends or our neighbors choose to take, and that there was spirit and soul, which was the essence of who we were, and moved through that area. One of my first times to understand this, I just want to say, I knew this song. I couldn't remember who it was, who'd recorded it. I went online, I found that Perry Como had recorded it, Elvis, Christina Aguilera. I went down to record stores, and I couldn't find who recorded it. And then on Sunday, that same Sunday, I run into Ed Goldberg at a health food store and tell him about this story. And he said, you should put that on the air. And I said, well, I'd already decided to do that. I'm going to tell Marlene it live. And I said, this song came up. And he said, oh, that was Ocean. And so the people at For What It's Worth Record out on Woodstock were really kind and got me that CD so I could share it with you. One of my first encounters with the mysterious was with my Uncle Carl, who was also a great comedian, made people laugh, I'm sure, every day of his life, made us howl when we go out and visited on him at his farm in Wallowa, Oregon. Got to ride his horses, got to go out in the wilderness, got to pump water since they didn't have running water, and got to use his outhouse since they didn't have indoor commodes. And my Uncle Carl was about 6'5", just as lanky as could be, just made you laugh, and he came down with a cancer. And he was treated by the veterans' hospitals, but he was sent home to his town to die when it went too far, and he was laying in bed for weeks, not moving, and then one day he got up. And he went into town, and he went into the funeral parlor, and he made the arrangements for his passing, took care of everything that he felt he needed to do, and he went home. And the next day he passed. My Aunt Nora had a dream that he was sitting at the foot of her bed that night, and just said, it's okay, Nora. I'm happy where I am. And she gets up the next morning with her crank phone. I don't know if you folks remember that. They're on the wall with the wood, and you share party lines. And my Uncle Jess calls my Aunt Nora, and she says, Nora. He says, what? She said, do you know what happened to me? And she said, tell me. And she says, last night I had a dream that Uncle Carl came and sat on my bed and told me that he was leaving. So there is an awful lot to this aspect of myth of the departure. The yogis tell us don't cry about themselves. They're just leaving an old automobile frame behind and that they're still there. I'm writing a book on juices right now, and my publisher suggested, not talking about this topic, that I read Tuesdays with Maury. And so I read that this week, and it's a delightful, touching story about a man who got Lou Gehrig's disease and was passing. And one of his students, who loved him as a coach and a father, saw a Ted Koppel show on him, hadn't seen him for 20 years, and reconnected and spent every Tuesday with Maury. And as Maury. He was on Ted Koppel because he decided to live more in his passing than he had lived, and he lived a remarkably full life. So one of the nice things from Tuesdays with Maury is a little story about a little wave bobbing in along in the ocean. Having a grand old time, he's enjoying the wind and the fresh air until he notices the other waves in front are crashing against the shore. "My God, this is terrible," the wave says. "Look what's going to happen to me." Then along comes another wave. It saw the first wave looking grim and says to him, "Why do you look so sad?" The first wave says, "You don't understand. We're all going to crash. All of its waves are going to be nothing. Isn't it terrible?" And the second wave says, "No, you don't understand. You're not a wave. You're part of the ocean." There are a lot of things that we have to do in this life. In the Ayurvedic aspects, they talk about the bhags, that for us to fully move up into the higher heavens beyond the astral plane, that we have to live our way through all of those desires for that is not service and love, that is not truly of the spirit, and that until we have satisfied every craving, every desire, we will be forced to return and experience life again until we have finished this process, until we have washed ourselves of our karma, of our past actions. The Greeks, again, Plato and Pythagoras both talked about the desires of humans, that the desires are of three natures: knowledge, honor, or profit. The honor is the fame and fortune that so many people pursue. The profit is what takes so much from others and leaves so much disparity, as people throughout the world do not have enough. And the knowledge is the path that so few people take. I'm reading The Knight in Rusty Armor with my first grade daughter, which is about great fairy tale about a knight that gets stuck in his armor and has to, under Merlin's advice, take the tale of truth and pass through the silence and the wisdom to ever get the armor off. And it's a metaphor for what we shroud ourselves with, who we want to be, what type of car we drive, what clothes we wear. And what's really important is that we learn to love our neighbors as ourselves. Pythagoras said it is important that we love everybody as our brother. And if they have character faults that we cannot admire, it is even that much of a higher calling and responsibility for us to love them. So Hermes had an interesting comment on this. He said that those things that we own we call possessions. For the desire of possessions is like a noose around our soul's neck, holding us onto the earthly path, that return. My teacher, Edgar Cayce's doctor, who's still living today, put it this way. When you're ready to merge in the astral plane, your trunk better not be laden or sparks will fly. We can take the Ayurvedic, the unraveled string through the eye of the needle, or we can take the religious aspects of the metaphor of it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven than a camel through the eye of the needle, and realize that in the Old Testament, the eye of the needle was that one gate in the temple and in the city, in the wall, that was not closed on the Sabbath. It was the shape of a camel. You had to take your wares off the camel to enter into that day of looking within. Now, of course, the word church means our body. When we go to church, we go into our heart. And that is a great lesson, because people like this man I dealt with, like my uncle, like many of the teachers I have, come from the heart. They come from what Plato called simple ignorance, that desire to learn and live, not from the complex ignorance, that belief that we alone can understand the ever ununderstandable mysteries by filling our brain with conversations and with a multitude of facts, and realize that every new science discovery in its shadow is a past falseness. And every new discovery has a great potential to be a future falseness as somebody discovers something different. So I wanted to open up to you listeners who may want to share or have questions, whether you want to talk about this, and we're at 503-231-8187. The wisdom eventually results from the effort to cope rationally with the problem of the unknown. And that comes from Plato and the Platonists. One of the interesting things, I talk a lot about religion, but in Medina, where Muhammad is buried, at his grave is Abu Bakr, his closest friend Omar, and a space reserved for Jesus Christ. A lot of us, as we fear and wonder who these Muslims are, don't bother to read the Quran, which if you read it, you find that Muhammad said that there was room in heaven with Allah for Jews and Christians if they followed the laws. Those laws were made simple by who Muhammad considered an Immaculate Conception, a prophet. But he didn't consider that God in the physical body impregnated some and took issue with some of the icons that came from that. But those simple rules were: choose to honor the spirit of creation and love your brother as yourself. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to mention near-death experiences, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
All the people that I've ever met who've had an experience have been changed and have gone through the rest of their life in a totally different way, almost like the little wave story that you told, that they were the other wave who was saying, don't you know that you're part of something bigger?
I thank you for that. It's a wonderful confirmation of what we have going on in this world. The constant information that comes to us, we find in one of the books I read by Ram Chandra recently, one of his blessings, his morning prayers, his maxims, is that we accept pain and suffering as a blessing from above. Now, this isn't the aspect of Pope Urban, who started the concept that it is divine to suffer, and that being a good person of that old church, that suffering was totally appropriate. It was an aspect of learning lessons from what goes wrong in your life. I've been rather blessed in that when I was young and I made worse mistakes, the lessons almost were immediate. And if we stay awake, then we don't have to necessarily repeat them as many times. We don't have to continually trudge through the same old, same old. And it is often important for a lot of us to ask the universe for a teacher if we are confused with the lessons of life, because the universe will provide. Simplicity is another one of the maxims of Ram Chandra, and it was a maxim of my teacher, the doctor that I still study with, who's been a naturopath for 67 years now and is still... He retired 2 years ago, but he still goes to conferences. He's still learning. He still wants to learn. He has that simple ignorance that makes people listen to their lessons and find comfort in the people around them and what they can do for them, and discovering, like the knight in rusty armor, that there's a beautiful person inside. And we don't have to try to be better than somebody else, because we are beautiful and perfect in our own being. Ramakrishna once put it this way. When one of his students came and said, "Oh, Master, how can you see beauty in everyone? How can you see beauty in a thief or a murderer?" And Ramakrishna effortlessly says, "Well, we all come as this precious stone, Because some of us in our lives choose to wallow in the mud, and we become encased in it. That precious stone still stands strong within. And when you look within people, when you look within their eyes, when you look at their smiles, when you have the preciousness of being able to be around children who have not encumbered themselves with all of the goals and aspirations of our Western society, you have the opportunity to reflect on yourself, to recognize who you are, and to understand. A Christian minister of mine, I was going to a service one time, and he came out there and said, "You don't need to have a bunch of rules to follow. Your heart knows. All you have to do is think about how it feels, and then you will know how you should act." And we've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
I agree with that last statement. What you said about the little wave meant a lot to me. My mom's in the process of passing, and we've been doing hospice with her in her home. My brother does it, the primary hospice, because I live in the Coast Range, and she lives in Portland. She's down to about 55 pounds, and she doesn't believe in medicine or doctors. Mm-hmm. So I go in once a week and read from the Bible. And her sustenance is spiritual information. And I think it's what keeps her breathing. This last week, it appears that she's having trouble breathing. It's very difficult for her to eat. But she was a Christian Science practitioner, or I guess mm-hmm. she still is. She's still with us. And her mother was. And that was my grandma. And she used to say, and this is what reminded me of the little wave, should a little sunbeam say, "I have so much to do today, so much darkness to make light." And it's not the sunbeam that has to do it by itself. The sun brings us the light. And the sunbeam is just part of the whole. And just being around a lot of the elders that have been passing this last year in my life. And when I go to work, it really helps. It takes the stress off me. I'm around children and moms, addicted moms, drug-addicted moms and their children. And just the joy of the children and the strength the moms are getting from coming off of methamphetamine, it's such a great break to me. I can't imagine normally saying I just love to go to work, but I do just love to go to work right now to see the life, see life on one end, and to see on the other end a person whose flesh is falling away. You know, it's really something else to deal with, and it's me that's holding on. I think my mother's holding on. I think the minute she stops holding on, like your uncle, went to the funeral parlor and started getting ready, and he stopped holding on. He knew it was time. Then she'll probably pass, because I think she's been holding on a really long time.
And you will find that she isn't going anywhere. Where there is love, there is eternity in our lives, and her body is tired and withered, mm-hmm. but she's proud, as proud as she can be, for what you're doing and the service you're giving. And for that time that you come over and read the book that she chooses to hear.
Right.
And you're giving love to the Spirit, and that's going to just lift her that much higher.
Well, last week's lesson was Spirit. This week's lesson in her Christian Science quarterly. I read the Bible and the Science and Health. This week's is Soul. The week before that was Life. And I don't know. I think it's helping me a lot. I do know that the spirit is what is in your consciousness of that person, so it can't die, because your consciousness, and until I don't know where I'm going, but in my consciousness, my elders are there right now as if they were standing in front of me in the flesh.
I so appreciate your calling and sharing with our listeners, because part of today. Show is the theme that transitions are to be embraced with love, mm-hmm. to let go of the fear, to recognize the preciousness of that time you've got to spend with those people, because often we don't get that opportunity. We may not be there when people pass. We may not have the warning signs, and it is really precious that you have this time with your mother and that you have the time to do good works and continue, because one of the things in Tuesdays with Maury that he continued to say was, I don't want my dying to stop my children from living. And you are certainly living a full life. And as you mentioned it, I just thought it might be nice for us, since we've got a Christian Science reporter over in the Middle East, for those people today to just put a little thought towards her and put the thought in the reality of her happy release. Stay away from the fear. Accentuate the positive. And I'm going to take another caller, unless if you want to say anything further.
Could I say one thing that just amazed me? Last year my father died, and we took his ashes out into the ocean. We went out in a boat, and it was a blue sky day. It was windy. It was wintry. It was right. It was this same month last year. And we're way out in the ocean, and the captain of the boat that we had rented said, oh my gosh, he says, look at that, I can't believe it. And it was whales going by. And we were just putting my father's ashes over the side, and everyone was trying to put some over there. It was very heavy. And when it was my turn, it was all I could do to hold on to it. I was looking straight down into the ocean, and the ashes, the chemical of I don't know if what it is of the bones that have been burned or what, it was fluorescent. And the fluorescence went down, and I watched it go down, down. It was a fluorescent cloud going down into the ocean. And then the whales came right past the side of the boat. And I know that they don't eat big things. They mostly are, they're like sieves. They open their mouths and the water goes in, and they just get small things out of the water. So all of this fluorescence was going in inside them, and they were going down, I guess, maybe to South America. I don't know how far down they go when they're traveling south, but my father was going to be traveling with them, and I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. How out of our hands the nature around us is.
Yeah.
Caller, this is Marlena. I just wanted to thank you for an amazing call and share a couple of points with you. One is I went through the passage of my own mother and father also the same month, except 2 years apart, which I guess is not all that uncommon. My grandparents died 3 weeks apart, that sort of thing. But I think that the story you've given is so important for our listeners who are going through these kinds of changes, because you're really balanced on both sides of this issue in the way you describe going to work and being joyful about working with mothers and children while you're losing your mother. So there's a whole lot of mother-child stuff going on, but you're so balanced with it. And the thought of your dad riding with the whales is mind-blowing. And I just wondered, you know, one of the things we did with my mom was we said to her, Mom, it's okay, you can go anytime you want. And I wonder if that's happened in your family.
Well, she grabbed me last week. She's never done that. My mother, I don't know if you know much about Christian Science. It's very, I don't know if you've ever known a Christian Science practitioner, but she, it's never been a mom-daughter relationship. As
right.
Okay. Anyway, she grabbed me. She grabbed my arm and held on to it and just looked at me. She said, I love you so much.
Wow, there it
and
is.
And I thought, oh, my God. You know, she's saying goodbye.
Right. And letting you know that you were her daughter.
She never says stuff like that. She just makes, she's always made statements of generality,
right,
that everything is love and all things that are of God, and you know all this. And I've always wanted like a Jewish mother, someone who says, "Go ahead, you know, I'm so sorry that you don't feel good and that you hurt your toe." And it's never been like that. I've always never gone to the doctor. I've always had to bleed. I've always, you know, it's always been a route of one where I just had to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what it's done? It helps me with the clients that I work with.
Right.
They are such hypochondriacs. And, you know, I mean, they want medicine for absolutely anything. And I can talk them out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, I only talk them out of things I know for a fact that they're only doing out of habit.
Mm-hmm.
Little things. Like headache medicines and, you know, all the... because they're inundated with, you have to put something in you to get better.
Right, the numbing effect.
We're gonna take another caller,
okay,
Marlena, and I just want to again thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But let's.
And thank you for the wave story.
You're more than welcome, caller. And I think all of us now have an enlightened perspective on what it means to be a Christian Scientist. Okay, Stephen, here's your next caller.
I guess you're still on the air. Hello, are you still there?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to, first of all, acknowledge the last caller whose words were very inspiring and beautiful, and I'm going to keep that image of the whale internally and meditate on it. And thank you for your extremely inspiring program. It's been very uplifting on this beautiful, uplifting day. So my experience with death recently has been the passing of my grandfather, and he lived a very full life. He died.
Excuse me, caller, you're cutting out. Is there a radio on near you that you can turn off?
Yeah.
Please do.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Much better.
So he died, my grandfather died at the age of 91, and he lived a very full life. And my grandmother, she and him were so close, and she is also at that age, at 91 years old, and she lives in New York, which is very far from me. And she's having such a hard time right now. And my personal care for her in my heart is to give her some type of comfort or perspective. And I always tell her I'm there for her and that I love her. But she's not a very spiritually oriented person. I mean, every person is spiritual, but she doesn't have a spiritual practice or a religious or spiritual background. So her perspective on death is pretty, like, I mean, it seems like it has this one-dimensionality that I would love to try to talk to her about, but I feel like I'm having a hard time.
Well, maybe you can get a copy of this show, because we are recording it, and I would say that your grandfather is knocking at her door to tell her to be comfortable. And if you could just ask her to be open to the potential of getting that feedback. What our last listener talked about, the whales, that's totally into Native American philosophy and other philosophy, that we become the energy. We immerse ourselves into the next theory, and that's why Paracelsus said to entomb ourselves and leave our body makes us stuck in this life, and that the cremation, the Ayurvedic, letting your body be consumed by alligators to move on the life cycle, the soul can still stay and be happy. So you can contact me at my clinic later. I'll be getting a copy of this on CD, and I'd love to share it with you. Are you still there? We got another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Stephen. It's your medical astrology.
Hi. It's been a while.
It's been a while. Strength to you. It's and you're doing so good. And Marlena, I love the astrology reading. Just a thought. I just called to give props. In the astrology view, we partake of the energy around at the time we're born. And not much is talked about at the end. It's the same thing. And this time is a very... a very deep time for people's passing, and the symbol would be Coretta Scott King. The great ones are passing now, just as the great ones are born together. And there's a new cycle beginning. This full moon is the turning point, and we need those souls to leave this body now. To get into the new ones just on the other side of the cycle.
I would love to have our guests talk and talk, but I scripted this show, and we're going to start with the last song. So please call back. Please
stay
in tune. And do call back next show or anytime you want to. I'd love to hear from you. So we're going to listen to a song by George Harrison. Song in the background and turn it back up as it gets towards the end. This show's been on transitions, and George Harrison has always been my favorite of the Fab Four, and that's been one of my favorite songs that he wrote. Socrates said that love is the hunger of the human soul for divine beauty. We are not experiencing love when we love the armor of a knight, when we think we love our car, when we find those sorts of temporary excitements. That isn't the complete love. Maury, this incredible man who could barely breathe as he shared his inspiration with on Tuesdays, said that the most important thing in life is to learn how to give love and how to let it come in. And that's truly one of the things. When we begin to love nature, when we begin to love the planet, when we begin to recognize, like those whales, like the many animals that share with us what is out there, we begin to become rich. Thoreau once said that a person's wealth can be judged by the number of things they can leave untouched. And we have a very impoverished society today as we continue to go after the I, Me, Mine. Right before this album came out, right before the Beatles split up, I, Me, Mine was a song that George Harrison wrote. Many of the Beatles songs before that time seemed to be about others. They seemed to be about life. And I think that song was really about his three friends who became so enamored with themselves. I wrote a paper in Social Psychology in college 35 years ago on the influence of the Beatles on American culture. We all thought that Yoko Ono pulled John away from the Beatles. I've got a new feeling and thought and knowledge that George, finding love and simplicity and peace, is probably what broke the Beatles apart. As he gave them love and they caused him pain. If you listen to the end of this song, a song that they stole, probably from George Harrison, Hey Jude, is played in the background in the chorus. I'm Dr. Stephen Bailey. Have a blessed week.
Talk about a Valentine's Day gift of love. Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Amazing segment. Thanks so much for being here. And blessings to all the people listening who really are feeling that. We are now at 10 o'clock. You're tuned to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 on the FM band. My name is Marlena Smith. I'm going to give you a little bit of information, and I'll be right back with a piece that I selected, unknowing what Stephen was going to do. And it's Jimmy Cliff, Many Rivers to Cross. I think it'll be a nice transition. Hang on.
The Portland International Film Festival is on again, and as usual, there are way too many films to choose from. But don't worry, KBOO is here to help. On Tuesday morning, we'll present a program of reviews of films in the festival. That's 9:30 Tuesday morning for the Portland International Film Festival.